Welcome to the Art of Med School, where we help creative minds understand medicine. Today we are going to be talking about the middle ear, how to stay positive in tough times, and CVID and hyper-IgM.
Let's pick up where we left off with the ear. We had talked about the external ear before and all the weird and wacky, like pharyngeal or arch origins. Actually, the pouches, to be honest. But so we're going to go from the external ear to the middle ear. If you remember right, the external ear ended at the tympanic cavity or the tympanic membrane or the eardrum. And then after that starts the middle ear. So starting at the eardrum or the tympanic membrane, moving in is the middle ear. It actually ends at what we call the cochlea or the oval window. You probably know what the cochlea is. Sort of looks like a, looks like a seashell to me. This area, this middle area, is called the tympanic cavity, and it's filled with air. It's basically just like this canal, and it comes from a mixture of first and second pharyngeal arches, which are, you know, important for embryology type things. The tympanic cavity and the auditory tube come from the first pharyngeal arch. This area also communicates with empty spaces in your skull, like especially in your mastoid, which is one of the, actually you can usually feel your mastoid process. If you reach up underneath your ear, you can feel there's a little bony bump. That's your mastoid. And ear infections can spread into, there's like a sinus in there, an air-filled cavity in there. And an ear infection can spread into that, and that's called mastoiditis. Again, easy language thing. Itis means inflammation, and it's inflammation of the mastoid, so mastoiditis. So to further complicate all that innervation stuff we talked about last time, the tympanic cavity is innervated by the tympanic plexus and nerve. And these are both branches of CN9, which is a glossopharyngeal nerve. Glossopharyngeal nerve is actually primarily tongue stuff. And yet, we're doing all this stuff up in the ear. It's actually, glossopharyngeal is, like taste and palate elevation, that kind of thing. But it reaches up and does your tympanic cavity innervation as well. The middle ear, I think everybody probably knows this, but the middle ear is also where we have our ossicles. Those ossicles are the little bones that I think most people learn, the hammer, the anvil, the stirrup. We have more technical names for them because, you know, medicine. The hammer is called the malleus. It's the very first one. It's the first, and which it comes from the first pharyngeal arch. But it runs vibrations from the eardrum to the incus. The incus, which is second, normally called, or I guess, layman term, anvil, or whatever you want to say, layman term, I guess. Also from the first arch, that translates from the malleus to the stapes. The stapes, which you probably know as a stirrup, it comes from the second arch, and that transmits to the oval window. Oval window is where we'll pick up with the inner ear. A little additional information here. The ear has two muscles in this area. First one is the stapedius, which is innervated by a branch of cranial nerve 7. Again, just to keep complicating things, that branch is not complicated, called the nerve to the stapedius. And that stapedius muscle attaches to the stapes. And this is, I think, really interesting. What it does is when there's a loud noise, it contracts. That muscle contracts. And it makes the stapes able to move less. When it is able to move less, it's going to transmit less vibrations to the oval window. And so essentially, it dampens sound. If there is, let me jump to the next part. The tensor tympani is the other muscle. Again, not a complicated nerve. Nerve to tensor tympani. However, what's weird is that this comes from V3, not from 7. So this comes from the fifth cranial nerve, first arch. This attaches to the malleus, and it kind of does the same thing, but the difference here is that we see more paralysis of V3 than we do of 7 in this area. So I started to get a little complicated already right there. So what can happen, the tensor tympani does the same thing, except instead of attaching to the stapes, it attaches to the malleus, and it contracts to dampen loud noises. We have this thing called hypoacusis. So if you can hear, it's like a loss of sound dampening. So your hearing is basically two goods. And it happens with like low pitch. I don't know about the low pitch sounds. I'm taking that back. Basically what happens is if V3, sometimes 7, mostly V3 is what we talk about, gets paralyzed, then that tensor tympani can't contract and it can't dampen the loud sounds. So you actually have too good of hearing where noise levels that are above normal that you could normally withstand, but they're, you know, maybe a little loud, will actually be like super loud and deafening to you. All right, let's leave it there. That's the middle ear. Next time we do the ear, we'll go on into the internal ear.
Make sure you check us out on artofmedschool.com. We have a ton of more information, blog posts, any of our past episodes that you might have missed, as well as some really fun underwater photography that Mike has been working on. There's some cute photos of fish. So check us out on artofmedschool.com. All right. So today I am going to be talking about how to keep yourself positive in tough times. I am not always the best at this, I am going to freely admit. And so, but I think sometimes when you are not very good at something, you do a lot more research for it. And so you learn a little bit more, a few more tricks. Like if it was something that you naturally are good at, then you don't have to learn about it and you don't have to quantify, you don't have to make lists, you don't have to make yourself reminders. If you are someone that does need it, then you will do those things, right? I mean, just like anything else, like if you are not a naturally tidy person, you are going to intentionally go through and give yourself checklists and give yourself reminders on how to be able to do those things. Because, you know, you're a grown-ass woman and you have to be able to keep yourself positive sometimes yourself, right? So something that I like to think about a lot and something that we actually use as our family, like, mascot or motto is be the buffalo. And so the story behind that is they say that if a buffalo is on the wide open prairie and they see a storm hurtling across it, that they don't run away from the storm. They don't hunker down and let the storm pass. That what they do is that they run directly into the storm because they know that's how the storm gets done the quickest, which is true. And I love that visual of being like, yep, the storm's coming at me and I'm going to come right at it and then it'll get done and we'll all be stronger for it. And so So I like that. And I actually have a buffalo tattooed on my foot and Micah has one tattooed on his ankle because we like the idea of trying to walk like the buffalo, walking into adversity when we need to. So that puts me to my first thing. If I'm having a tough time, I talk to Micah because he's the person that I'm okay with the most feeling vulnerable around. This next one is sometimes a healthy choice and sometimes not a healthy choice. I keep myself busy. If I know that things are going wrong in other places in my life, I will keep myself busy and keep myself distracted, and keep myself working hard. And sometimes that's exactly what needs to happen. Sometimes that's a little bit like running away from your problems. So making sure that you're holding yourself accountable, keeping yourself in check for that. Sometimes when I am a less good version of myself, I
I do what I like to call the compost pile method of conflict resolution, that that if you walk away from a problem for long enough, the belief is that it will break down and turn into nutrient-rich soil. And honestly, sometimes it does. You know, if I'm just, like, freaking out for no good reason, or if I'm upset about something that I think, if I think that I'm actually mad about this one thing, but it's really just me reacting to something completely different, yeah, then those things do go away if you walk away from them. Other times, they start smelling like shit. So, making sure you're knowing yourself well enough to be able to hold yourself accountable for your own shenanigans. I notice also, I come by it pretty honestly. I notice that I tend to have a harder time when I feel like I am not in control. And maybe have a few control issues where I like to be in control of a lot of things. Maybe this is why I do theater and why I direct plays, where I get to choose the world and I get to choose where the light is and I get to choose exactly where everybody stands, or I get to choose everything. I get to choose what it sounds like. I get to choose, you know, a lot. So maybe I am a few things in my life are about control. But noting that when I don't feel like I am in control and the world is happening around me and I am not an active participant, that that is when I find myself getting down and getting anxious. And so, like, for example, we found out pretty recently that Micah is getting a shorter period of time off for the birth of our child than we were anticipating. And so we're going to have to schedule that time a little bit more delicately. And as many people know, babies don't always come on time and they don't always arrive on schedule. And I think they probably do that to prepare you for the rest of your life. So I think that being a mother is probably going to be very good for my control issues. I don't know how good it was for my mother's, but, you know, whatever. And so knowing that that was a potential that wasn't going to happen and feeling really like I wasn't in control of it. And it was something that I was upset about anyway, you know, the possibility that he wasn't going to be there. And, you know, the very real knowledge that he won't be there for a lot of this kid's first, like when this kid first rolls over and when this kid first starts crawling and, you know, all of that stuff, that he won't be there. And so what I, and being really afraid of the prospect that I wasn't going to have him potentially, that there was the potential that he wasn't going to be there for the actual birth process and my labor and me not knowing what I'm doing and all of that stuff. So I was kind of flipping out about that. And so I decided, you know what? There is a person in the world that has a job that is to do that. And so I'm going to take charge and I'm going to hire myself a doula, which I did. And I'm super excited. I think she's awesome. And it's really nice that she is a non-biased person. And I suppose, if there is bias, it's towards me, which is really great. And so that's a small way that I can control a situation that I otherwise wouldn't have felt like I've had much control over. So that's nice. And then another thing that I do when I feel negatively is I think about future moments that are going to be super awesome, you know? So thinking about future plans that we have together, thinking about times that we are going to be together, what this sacrifice is going to look like for the future of our family, what this sacrifice is going to look like for what we get to do for our community as well. And I think that is always really helpful. Maybe not always, like, you know, if I'm like really upset and crying or whatever, like that's maybe not like that thing that I need to think about. That's a maybe call Micah and talk to him moment. And let's also be super honest. I've got all sorts of pregnancy hormones going on in the system right now. And so, me freaking out is unfortunately a little bit more common than it tends to be. So, and last, but certainly not least, is trying to build myself a network and of people and support. It's very fortunate that it's so fortunate that I live with his parents and they're such awesome people. And my folks are super close. I don't have much of a friend network in this area, but I'm working on it. I've got coffee with a person that I kind of almost know on Tuesday. So like just keeping to try to expand that and becoming involved, which is one of the downsides of keeping myself busy and making sure that I'm constantly working, is that I don't have time to like build friendships right now. But something that I'm working on cultivating and hopefully like, being able to do so with like new mom groups and things like that. Hopefully I'll be able to meet people that way too. So making sure that I know that myself as an extrovert needs those things. So yeah, those are some of the things that I do. I don't know if any of that's helpful for anybody else, but sometimes it's important for me to verbalize it. So that's all I got. Thanks. We launched our Patreon account. Please go check it out. You can find a link on our website or just look up Art of Med School on patreon.com. This is a great way to support us as we work hard to make the most and best content possible. You can find more information on our homepage at artofmedschool.com. And every little bit helps. Thanks.
So we're going to keep adding on to our immunodeficiencies that we've talked about. Today we're going to talk about two of them, actually, common variable immunodeficiency and hyper-IgM syndrome. So common variable immune deficiency is usually abbreviated to CVID, and it's a cluster of syndromes, different deficiencies, genetic things, that all have the same thing in common. Hypogammaglobulinemia. And like I've said before in other immunodeficiency things, hypogammaglobulinemia is just a really fun word to say. So hypo, low, gammaglobin, which is like your IgE, IgA, IgM. We have a whole, not a whole episode, but we did do a whole piece on all the different gammaglobulins. Basically, they're different parts of your immunity system. So hypogammaglobinemia, low gammaglobin. The anemia just means in your blood. This usually presents in like your 20s to 30s. You have recurrent sinus and pulmonary infections because all your IgA, IgM, all of them are down. So you're at risk for sinus and pulmonary infections. You're also going to have a lot of autoimmune diseases. If you remember, and if you have questions on this, jump on over to the blog because we have some articles on different autoimmune diseases. Specifically, we have a whole we talk about each hypersensitivity. But the autoimmune diseases are things where, like, you get sick and your immune system fights off that sickness, whatever infection. And in the process, it gets confused and kind of overdoes its job. And in overdoing its job, it starts to see your own cells as foreign cells. So this is things like SLE, this is our systemic, it's lupus, SLE is lupus, reactive arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis is another example. We see the immune system attacking specific, whether it's cells or tissue, it could even be receptors on cells like in myasthenia gravis, but it's the body attacking itself, and it's usually post-infection. So in common variable immunodeficiency, what's interesting here is that we have B cells. They're just totally unable to differentiate. So they can't switch to, like, you know, B cells are making IgA or they're making IgM or IgE or whatever. They're unable to differentiate. And so that shuts down kind of that wing. Now, in contrast, or I guess kind of similar more, hyper-IgM syndrome, which is the second one I wanted to talk about, you have the B cells, and they can't class switch to produce anything but IgM. Now, IgM is really important. It's important for your second, sort of your second infection of something, your second round of your immune response, but you need IgG in the meantime to help fight your infections, because IgM takes a while to be able to work, essentially. But we're turning out tons of IgM and nothing else. No IgG, no IgA. IgA is really important for basically all of your mucus secretions. So that's what's in, like, your respiratory tract. That's what's in a woman's vagina. That's what's in your nose, your GI tract. And it's in there fighting all these pathogens before they really, really get in. But we don't have any IgA. So that is a cause of recurrent infection. Sinopulmonary, so nose and lung infections are a really common one. The specific default for the B cells is that it's a defective CD40 ligand. That's really only important for the med students out there. I feel like my voice sounds funny, like it's high or something. It feels very much up in my throat. Anyway, that secondary receptor, the CD40 ligand is the secondary receptor needed for class switching. If you're not in med school, don't worry about it. Okay, so the other really interesting thing that I want to add with hyper-IgM syndrome is that B cells do class switching. So they go from producing IgM to, like, IgA or IgG or whatever. They do that in a part of the lymph node called the germinal center. That's sort of where they get stored and trained or whatever you want to say. But that's where they do their class switching. What happens in hyper-IgM syndrome, since the germinal centers are used for class switching, we're not doing class switching. So histologically speaking, when you look at the lymph nodes, there is an absence of that germinal center altogether. And we're going to see this idea of that the body isn't, or the immune system rather, because we're going to be speaking specifically immune system, that the immune system isn't able to do something, and we're going to see an actual histological or tissue, I guess, microscopic change in the body based off of the idea that we're not able to do something that takes place there, which is kind of a really interesting idea. It'd be like, what would be a good example of that? It'd be like if you were a really crappy cook and you ate out most of the time, and so your kitchen just disappeared. Yeah, I know a few people, actually, now that I say that, I know a few people that would probably be okay with it. And then they would use it to justify not cooking ever. I couldn't do that. I love to cook. All right, that's hyper-IgM and CVID.
All right, there you have it. That was episode number 30 of The Art of Med School, where we help creative minds understand medicine. That was The Middle Ear, How to Stay Positive in Tough Times, CVID, and hyper-IgM syndrome. Thanks a lot. Catch you next time. Our theme music, Urbanimatronica Wuya Mix by Spinning Mercata, is copyright 2011, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. This show is not affiliated or endorsed in any way by St. James School of Medicine. Micah just goes there. The Art of Med School podcast is part of the Art of Med School Network. For more information, find us on the web at artofmedschool.com.